certain physical and psychological states to be found by northern seas, in northern races, among those who worship, or do not worship, at reformed altars, are perhaps to be best observed in resorts where a steady summer flow of visitors pours.
You are listening to the voice of Sir Osbert Sitwell reading his preface to Rack of Tide's End, a page from this week's edition of Anthology. This is Fleetwood. Each week at this time, the National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with the Poetry Center of the Young Men and Young Women's Hebrew Association in New York, brings you transcribed Anthology, a selection of readings from poets past and present, and the music to accompany their poetry. This week, the Sitwells, Sir Osbert and Dame Edith Sitwell, reading from their poetry. As two of the most resourceful leaders of English literature, the Sitwells have experimented actively in the art of communication with the reader. No one present at London's Aeolian Hall on June 12, 1923 will ever forget that amazing event. The Stenger phones, the painted curtain with its grotesque masks, behind which Dame Edith and Sir Osbert stood, and the poetry, completely of the voice and read with perfect art. Long after the original uproar subsided, the merits and demerits of such readings continued to be discussed. Those who felt that poetry needed only to be seen were countered by those who found increased understanding in hearing poetry read aloud by the author. It's for this constantly increasing audience that the Sitwells have continued their public readings, winning responsive converts on both sides of the Atlantic. Sir Osbert is the second eldest of a distinguished family of writers. Though he's best known in this country for Left Hand, Right Hand, his five-volume autobiography, his work has taken every other form of literature: essay, poetry, the novel, the short story, the drama, polemics, art criticism, and philosophy. He was born in London December 6, 1892, the son of Sir George Sitwell, himself a fine writer who did not have to take a back seat to his three talented children. Of his education, Sir Osbert says succinctly that it was gained during the holidays from Eton. He was with the Grenadier Guards from 1912 through 1919 and saw action in World War I at the Battle of Loos. His combat since has been primarily, as he puts it, hand-to-hand battles against the Philistine. He is for compulsory freedom everywhere, the suppression of public opinion in the interest of free speech, and the rationing of brains, without which innovation there can be no true democracy. Sir Osbert has described his recreation as thinking for himself and speaking for others, two avocations at which, in the opinion of most critics, he has proved himself brilliantly. From the Cadman LP album, Osbert Sitwell, we'll listen today to excerpts from Rack of Tide's End, England Reclaimed, and other volumes. First, from Rack of Tide's End, Sir Osbert Sitwell reads the preface and Lousy Peter.
Certain physical and psychological states to be found by northern seas, in northern races, among those who worship, or do not worship, at reformed altars, are perhaps to be best observed in resorts where a steady summer flow of visitors pours through a residue of permanent inhabitants. In this residue, perpetually refreshed by what remains outside the sieve, are to be studied many types that have elsewhere perished, as similarly, in the furthest recesses of mountains, you may find still the representatives of extinct races. A dwarf who scampers down the street singing, an old woman in a wheelchair with the sunlight suddenly blossoming on her face, can exhibit a whole range of the dead, an entire cycle of the world. Often the conduct of these people, such people as you might find at St. Address in the winter, will bear an appearance of affectation, but of affectation without the physical grace or stylized air that sometimes accompanies it. To the artist, the very ordinary is so extraordinary, yes, when submitted to the fires of his temperament, his capacity for observation, to be able to inspire him. Follow these people into their own homes, dog their footsteps to tombolas and bazaars, watch them, observe without their seeing you, write, state, but do not comment. Lousy Peter's terror was the workhouse. In the summer, he preferred to sleep on a flat coal pavement with his back against a railing. When the sun rose, he stood up, strode into the gold glory like a lion, shook the slumber from his limbs, shook his mane and rough patched clothing worn in layers. Begging crusts of bread that had been meant for the birds and scraps of meat, until, as at noon, he munched with his beard, lying in a patch of sunlight. The mob of town boys came to pester him, to pelt him, whirling round him as planets round a sun, jostling him, jumping up and down, their strident young voices tearing the air, mocking him as they shout, "Lazy Peter, crazy Peter, lousy Peter, lousy Peter." In the cold winter, at the edge where the town turned to country, and his brother, the scarecrow, guarded the fields from rooks, and the lamps stopped blossoming altogether, he slept under straw in the barn, where the owls screeched and the mice nibbled the grain. He would sleep late, then stirring under the straw, he, a sleepy warm bear, would sway clumsily onto his feet, would beg his way by the coal festoons of ivy, knocking at doors, whining, asking for bread, until it was time to return at night home to the straw under a frosty moon. If Lousy Peter's chief terror was the workhouse, next came charitable ladies. Professional beggar, he preferred to beg from unprofessional givers. He knew the frosty questions, but not the answers. The snow-cold reasonableness, burning like snow. The compelling kindness. He better liked a house where a barking dog denounced an enemy, and a voice called into the night, "Damn you, who are you? Who are you?" But again, he did not know the answer.
Sir Osbert Sitwell reads next, Winter the Huntsman, Danse Macabre, and Foxtrot. These are also from the Cadman album, which the poet recorded in New York on March 5th, 1953. Here again is Sir Osbert Sitwell.
Through his iron glades rides Winter the Huntsman. All color fades as his horn is heard sighing. Far through the forest his wild hooves crash and thunder, from many a mighty branch is torn asunder. And the red rennet creeps to his hole near the river, the copper leaves fall and the bare trees shiver. As night creeps from the ground, hides each tree from its brother, and each dying sound reveals yet another. Is it Winter the Huntsman, who gallops through his iron glades, cracking his cruel whip to the gathering shades? The Countess Klondike was of rather humble origin, though her pompadour peruke and her smile as of a cherubim both throw out a widow theme that is Spanish cosmopolitan and ancien régime more than Broadway American. Her fortune increased of itself an automaton till gold leaf encased the family skeleton, which danced and pranced till light from each limb flashed and bones crashed like castanets, but by no threats abashed and quelled by no epithets. In family tomb and factory, it maintained its mediota, revealing when refractory the fact that the quota not so long ago was not. Then, as though now in vertigo, proceeded to foot a reverberant gavotte, like the virulent virago that it was, as a parting shot. Now, the Countess Klondike, though modern and materialist, entertained a dislike for this Puritan casuist, so she feigned not to hear the bones that rattled and dangled, for the glint of the gold that sparkled and spangled, for she did not believe in things which she did not see. Therefore, if she looked the other way, those things could not be. The navy at Ezion Geba gazed across the water amazed when Solomon met the Queen of Sheba. E'en lands in the desert were dazed with wonder at her striped pavilion that blazed like a new parhelion. They roared their admiration at this strange coruscation, till the satyrs took their tawny children trampling through the sand to march with the procession, to march with the band. The flaming phoenix flew with its feathers to fan the queen at the head of her caravan, But the phoenix, though famously fabulous, was jealous, envious, and emulous. For the Queen of Sheba had a retinue strictly in keeping with her revenue. 6,000 camels and camelopards, 10,000 and 90 negro bodyguards. The camelopards, stiff-necked and tall, would scarce deign to notice the Queen at all, but the proud, though kindly camels kneel, offer their humps to the Queen to feel, nodding arched necks and plumes of ostrich feather, dyed like her bright Abyssinian weather, while 10,000 negroes beat on girds and golden gongs, slashing the air with their piebald songs. Thus the Queen met the King at Jerusalem, and he seemed wiser than Methusalem. With a great black beard and a nose like a scythe, he lived in the palace and subsisted on a tithe. He gave the Queen of Sheba a welcome, proportionate to her income. But this amazing Amazon was lovable, generous, and free. She brought a gift to Solomon of cinnamon, with an almug and a nutmeg tree. These he placed before his palace, for the presence to perfection of the populace. Each sweet-smelling branch bore a budding bell of gold, though the blood of the Israelites ran cold. When evening wind blurred the hills with blue, the swinging and the singing of the bells sang true. These, by some magic stratagem, played the Sheban national anthem, while the trill of each bell was like an Abyssinian bird, or the golden voice of the Queen. For each word she spoke trembled, sparkled in the air, then spread its wings and flew from her. But the Queen of Sheba went with Solomon to his country house at Lebanon, where she brought him gifts of hothouse grapes, of ivory, of ebony, of elephants and apes, of peacocks, of pearls, and 100 pygmy slaves, with skins like an orange and hair that waves. Above it, each wore a turban, picked out with the plumes of a pelican. But of all her gifts, by far the rarest, brought from the terrible central forest, with a vein of gold in its ivory horn, was a lovelorn milk-white unicorn. But the king, though sweet as honey, had an eye for the value of money, so he only gave her a heraldic lion embossed with the arms of Zion. Though the Queen of Sheba loved Solomon, she was not happy at Lebanon. It was not the women of the Edomites, the Zidonians, the Moabites, the Hittites, or the Ammonites. She would even listen to his proverbs. She put up with very many wrongs. But in secretly reading his notebook, she found Solomon's Song of Songs. She knew it at once. It was poetry, and she left the palace that day. But Solomon knew not where she went to, nor why she had roamed away. But every evening in Jerusalem, the almug and the nutmeg trees flaunt the Sheban national anthem, like a banner on the spice-laden breeze. And oh, each golden bell seemed a turtle dove that cooed within the moonlight shadow of an Abyssinian wood. But we wonder what she looked like, this phantom or phantasmagoria, Atalanta Gioconda Semiramis, or the late Queen Victoria.
Dame Edith Sitwell wears quasi-medieval robes of rich brocade, an enormous jade ring, and with a turban twisted over her dark red hair, she manages to look like a rough outline sketch for a Holbein portrait. The garb, however, is no idle prop. Dame Edith can inflect a stanza of poetry with the verve that Judy Garland puts into a new song. Ever since the days when she first put roses on Swinburne's grave, Dame Edith has been a legend in British letters. Arnold Bennett once said that she and her brothers, Sir Osbert and Sacheverell, live in a world of perceptions and sensations of their own, extraordinarily, insultingly different from anybody else's. At the first reading of her long poem, Facade, from which we'll hear excerpts today, Noah Coward stomped out of the Aeolian Hall in London, and the rest of the audience stayed only to boo and hiss. When it was finally performed at the Museum of Modern Art in 1949, a glittering audience fought for every top-scale ticket. Facade was recorded soon after its presentation at the museum and can be obtained on a Columbia Masterworks LP. Here first is Dame Edith Sitwell reading Hornpipe and En Famille from Facade. The musical score was composed by William Walton and is conducted by Frederick Prausnitz.
out of Babylon. Hobby horses foam the dunce, rhinoceros glum. Watch of horses, the breakers rocking horses with gorses. Lady Venus on the settee of the horse hair sea. Below Tennyson in laurels wrote a gloria free. In a borealic iceberg came Victoria free. New Prince Albert's storm memorial took the colours of the floral. And the borealic iceberg put on lazy. New arisen Madam Venus, whose hate from far came the pattern zebra'd emperor from Zanzibar. Well, like golden book is laid by Asia, Africa, Cathay, all lay before that shady lady by the fibroid char. Out of any water, but came stood with some anchors, both are drinking with that tar grape's blood, tucked among the tartan leafage, while the furry wind whose squeefage could not wither like a squiddle with a gold star nut. Queen Victoria sitting shocked upon the rocking horse of a wave said to the lawyer, this minx, of course, is as sharp as any lynx, back or deeper than the drinks, and quite as hot as any hot top without remorse. For the minx said she, and the drinks you see are hot as any hot top, not the good flea. Jemima, Joe Casper, Dinah, and Deb walk with our father, Sir Joshua Jebb, an Admiral Red, whose only notion, a butterfly poised on a pigtailed ocean, is of the perilled sea whose swell breaks on the flawless rocks of hell. Under the thin trees, Deb and Dinah, Jemima, Joe Casper walk, and finer their black hair seem less sleek to see than the young leaves of the springing bohea. Their cheeks were like nutmeg flowers when swells the rain into foolish silver bells. They said if the door you would only slam, or if, papa, you would once say damn, instead of merely roaring a bust or both, invoking the naughty door. We should now stand in the street of hell, watching siesta shutters that fell with a noise like amber softly sliding. Our moonlight glances through these gliding would see at her table preened and set, Mirina sitting at her toilette, with eyelids closed as soft as the breeze that flows from gold flowers on the incense trees. The Admiral said you could never call. I assure you it would not do at all. She gets down from table without saying please, forgets her prayers and to cross her T's. In short, her scandalous reputation has shocked the whole of the hellish nation. And every turban chinoiserie with whom we should sip our black bohea would stretch out her simian fingers to scratch you, my dears, like a mandolin. For hell is just as properly proper as Greenwich or as Bath or Joppa.
The most popular poem in Facade is The Waltz, which shows off Dame Edith's dramatic technique and her rich voice to their best degree. Even without William Walton's splendid musical setting, the poem seems to have a flow and rhythm suggestive of the dance for which it was named. Dame Edith Sitwell reads The Waltz from Facade.
Daisy and Lily, lazy and silly, walk by the shore of the wan grassy sea, talking once more neath a swan bosom tree. Rose castles, torrels, those bustles where swell each home bell of ermine. They roam and determine what passions have been and what passions will be, what tartan leaves born, what crinolines born. By Queen Thetis, felices of tarlatine blue, like the thin plaited leaves that the castle crags grew, or velour d'Aflande on the water god's land, a hairzingle trees on the honeysell sand, when the thickest gold spangles on deep water scene were like twanging guitar, like old mandoline, and the nymphs of great caves with hair like gold waves of Venus mortality, Louise and Charlatine, Boreas' daughters, and the nymphs of deep waters, the nymph Talione, Grisie, the Ondine, where planted Victoria and thin Clementine, like the crinoline waterfalls. Wood nymphs, fair bonnet shores, elegant parasols floating on sea. The Amazons wear a balserine of John Quill, beside the blonde lace of a deep falling rill. Through glades like a nun, they run from and shun the enormous and gold-rayed rustling sun. And the nymphs of the fountains send from the mountains like elegant willows on their deep balustrados in cashmere albanda, barege Isabel, like bells of bright water from clearest wood well, our elegance favoring bonnets of blonde, the stars in their apiaries, silks in their aviaries, seeing them spangled in sand, the silks fond, from their aviaries fan, with each long fluid hand, the motto is fun, your mimic the waterfall over the long and the light summer land. So daisy and lily, lazy and silly, walk by the shore of the wan grassy sea, talking once more neath a swan bosom tree. Rose castles, torreos, and bustles, nor rails that the shade in their train follow. Ladies, how vain hollow! Gone is the sweet swallow. Gone, Philomel.
Recalling her early years when she wrote Façade, Dame Edith said, I used to practice writing poetry as a pianist practices. I would take a waltz or polka, some gay music hall song, or perhaps the song of the barrel organ beneath my window, and translate it into words. William Walton, of course, put this practice in reverse when he wrote his musical settings for the Façade. In addition to the Columbia LP to which we're listening today, the Façade music can also be obtained by itself, recorded by the London Philharmonic Orchestra with the composer conducting. Dame Edith Sitwell concludes her readings from Façade with Four in the Morning, Something Lies Beyond the Sea, and Sir Beelzebub.
Cry the navy blue ghost of Mr. Malaika, the Allegro Negro cocktail shaker. Why did the cock crow? Why am I lost down the endless road to infinity tossed? I race through the leaves as white as water, ghostly flowed over the nursemaid, caught her, left her, edging the far-off sand is the foam of the sirens, metropole and grand. The guinea-fowl plumaged houses sleep. On one I saw the lone grass leap, and the sweet-winged doves of curded milk watch the infanta's gown of silk in the ghost room tall, where the governante gesticulates lente and walks andante. Madam, princesses must be obedient, for medicine now becomes expedient. The five ingredients, a the appendix, and a governante fading lente. In at the window then looked he, the navy blue ghost of Mr. Malaika, the Allegro Negro cocktail shaker, and his flattened face like the moon saw she, rhinoceros black, a flowing sea. Beyond the scene, the off-machine machine of sea horizon. In hell, back the bison, see the back argon, the silver, and the algamote, the bell rope.
moustache clears the great bell, way sedate, muttles, tongues, late the tambourines of rustling foam. The answer to the names of ancient names and chains, and only call horizons their home. Cold of east rises, there are at least the dance breezes, seeking for horizons, wide from horizons. In her wide pavilion by the seaside, the doors clang open and hide where the wind dies. Nothing but the princess cockatrice lean, dancing as a priest to the wind's tambourine. Called Piscillabop in the hotel in hell where Proserpine birthed. Fell blue as a gendarmerie were the waves of the sea, rocking and shocking the barmaid. Nobody comes to give him his rum, but the rim of the sky hippopotamus glum enhances the chances to bless with a venison. Alfred Lord Tennyson crossing the barley with cold vegetation, fruitarian deputations, the temperance workers all signed in memoriam, hoping with glory to trip up the laureate's feet, moving in classical meters. Like balaclava, the lava came down from the roof, with the seas from wooden gendarmerie took them in charge while Beelzebub roared for his rum. None of them come.
For your reference, Sir Osbert Sitwell reading his poetry can be obtained on a Cadman LP album. Dame Edith Sitwell reading Facade with the music of William Walton was recorded by Columbia Masterworks. Next week, we're very happy to have the pleasure and privilege of helping Cadman Records celebrate their third anniversary. Barbara Cohen and Marion Roney of the Cadman Company will be our special guests. And they've promised to bring us a surprise album with which they'll be inaugurating their fourth year as the foremost poetry on records concern in America. Anthology comes to you transcribed in cooperation with the Poetry Center of the YM and YWHA, 92nd Street and Lexington Avenue in New York. The program is an NBC radio production, written and directed by Draper Lewis. Until next week, this is Fleetwood wishing you good luck and good reading.